Hello, everybody. My name is Miss Parker, and thank you for coming to listen to this audio file. I appreciate you taking your time out of your day to learn a little bit about the difficulties about being rich. And a lot of people, like I was before I started the recording, I made a comment that a lot of people don't know, people that have never been wealthy, they don't know. There's some really icky things. There's some not good things about being wealthy. And most of the other wealthy people, they don't tell you shit. They are more than happy to let you fall on your face and figure it out on your own. So I decided that I'd talk about it because when you're wealthy and you complain about being wealthy, everybody looks at you like you're a fucking asshole. So it's really easy to have this conversation now because none of us are wealthy. So you guys are not going to look at me and go, oh, you're just being an asshole. No, I'm actually going to tell you some fucking terrible truth. Oh, boy. I roll myself a fatty because this one is always never a good topic. So I'm like, I'm going to calm my ass down before I get started. So here's your disclaimer liability. The material and information contained or given on this website or audio file is for general information only. All parties on this channel are not lawyers or are we financial advisors. You are using this information with your own discretion. You should not rely upon the material or information in this website or audio cast as a basis for making any business decisions. While I do endeavor to keep the information up to date and correct as possible, RV Project Help makes no representation or warranties of any kind, expressed or implied, about the completeness, accuracy, reliability, suitability, or availability with respect to the website, audio file, information, products or services, or related graphics contained on this website for any purpose. All due diligence is the responsibility of the participant. And there's the train. I just have the best luck. I saw a couple comments in here. I'm gonna, yeah, absolutely. Puff, puff, pass. I'm having a day. I'm telling you, I'm trying to stop being cranky. Weed usually works. Don't know why. So, strong ass weed. The other day I had a gal reach out to me and she's going through a rough time. Her partner wants her to retire. And she wants to do a project. And I got to reach out to her again because I got a case of the guilt after I talked to her because I think I gave her some bad advice. I mean, I don't ever want to give anybody bad advice, so I need to, let's see if she's in here. Nope, she's not in here, so I'm going to send her this message. Just listen to the first 5 minutes. I'm talking about you. So what happens is she reached out to me and said that she had made a promise to her husband and that they would retire and that she felt like, you know, she was not going to be able to do this and a couple other things. I said, look, don't give up your dream for nobody. Do it no matter what. Okay. And if he's not okay with it, get it set up and then show it to him. And if he's still not okay with it, then you can make some decisions, but don't give up your dream until you give every try another way, you know, just doing nothing is making a decision to try another way. And the way I suggested is that she just hire everybody and oversees it, tells her husband or partner. I'm not sure if it's her husband or her partner. Look, think of this as my hobby. My hobby is going to be to give shit away. How's that for a fucking hobby? And because I have this badass hobby, you're going to be living in a multi-million dollar home. Are you okay with this? And I can't imagine a husband coming back and saying, fuck no, bitch, I want to live in my little broke down shack. I'm pretty sure this is going to go over well. The thing that I don't think will go over well is how she reacts to everything with this project in the first 30, 60 days. Because, we're talking about scale, okay? And I'm trying to figure out a way to explain scale that makes sense. And so here's scale, okay? I want you to know the difference between being a millionaire and a billionaire, okay? And I also need you to know that with my stupid, my crazy disability, not stupid, I'm not stupid, not one fucking bit. In my disability, I switch words, I flip words all the time, and I can't tell that I'm doing it. So I need you to know that that is a serious issue with me, is I flip words. I do not ever like to be the face of my company. Because I do not ever do my own presentations because I flip words. And that can lead to a lot of fucking bad mistakes. Just saying, oh, it's costing me a lot of money when I've done it. Don't do that no more. So that was bad memory. Funny now, not good then. So I'm telling you that I flip words because I'm going to try to tell you this using the correct words. But understand this, if I flip them, I'm not going to be able to tell the difference. Okay. So fair warning. Okay. I'm reading this so I don't screw this up. Okay. There is a major difference in the scale of wealth between a millionaire and a billionaire. Okay. I do not think that any of us will actually be trillionaires. I think we might be 990 billion. I mean, I think we might, some of us might go up that high. The whales and that kind of shit. But for the most of us, we will probably be millionaires. And I think a great amount of us will be billionaires based on information you have given me privately about the amount of currency most people have. I'm saying this strictly as averages, strictly as averages. So for you to understand the scale that you have between millionaire and billionaire, 1 million seconds. In a row is 11 days. 1 million seconds in a row is 11 days. Okay. 1 billion seconds in a row is 31 years. See the difference? Scale. So when you're talking millionaire, billionaire, you're talking a scale of money that you have never been exposed to. Most of us are going to end up being in the high 100 millions. Some of us will be in billions, is what I believe. I may be completely wrong. But even if you are 100 million, that's t like 10 years. Or no, not 10 years, that's 3 years. It's a lot, okay? So based on what this person told me, she's going to be closer to the billion seconds. And if that's the case, there was a guy that did the song called More Money, More Problems. Oh, fuck. I just started laughing. I was like, oh, God, this guy doesn't have any idea what it actually means. Oh, more money, more motherfucking problems. Way bigger problems. In just way bigger problems. Way bigger problems, okay? When the scale is from 11 days to 31 years, the job, the project gets as exponentially bigger as the amount of money is that you can throw at it. So the more money you have to put in your businesses, in your humanitarian projects, in all the things you're going to do, the more your brain has to work on it, because there's a massive difference between 11 days and 31 years. So if your project is an 11-day project, then it's not going to be difficult to delegate from afar. If your project is a billion-dollar project, it is a lengthy, difficult, and tiresome problem and process to get all of those things lined out to make use of and put in play a billion damn dollars. Be careful what you wish for, folks. If you're getting involved to be a humanitarian for status, someplace along the way, you're going to realize it's not worth it. Get involved in this for the right reason. Get involved in this because of passion, not personal status, okay? Because to maintain the levels of where you're going to go to, you're going to need to meet that scale. And you're going to want to. Because if it's something important to you, if it's as important as it is to you, as you think it is, when you have the money and no limits, you will work very hard and you will play very hard. But all of that stress is going to take a toll on your mind and body to get all of those things working in a row, to get everything working right. Even if you're the COB, the chairman of the board, even if you're not the CEO, you have a massive responsibility to make sure that that money that you get is spent wisely. So it's going to weigh on you if you end up being a billionaire. Okay? This is the shit nobody that's wealthy will tell you. They don't tell you this shit. They just don't fucking tell you. They let you fucking fall on your face. And then they laugh at you. And then you go to the bar and you have a couple of drinks and we're all friends now because you've been through the hell. I don't want you guys to go through this shit, okay? When you have got, if this is happening to you right now, then you're doing the right thing. If you're at a point right now, your brain is not stopping working. If you're constantly in a state of stress over what is going to happen, over what's going to happen with your family, and you're trying to make it work, you're thinking about it. Okay, your brain keeps going to the point where you're like, God bless America, I have to go to sleep now. Okay? That is an important difference in scale of how you think versus someone who goes to bed and watches the TV and falls asleep to the TV. The last guy is a millionaire. The first guy is a billionaire. That's the difference in scale and how you're going to think. Okay? Nobody tells you this shit. Nobody tells you that as you get more and more and more money, your brain starts to expand to try to handle all that. And it's a lot. Okay? So if you're doing this for status, because you want to be, I want to be known as this and that, you're in this for the wrong reason, folks. You're going to find out real quick it's not worth it. It's intense. Very intense. The more money, the more problems, and the more intense it is, because you're going to be thinking, because you're going to feel that responsibility. I tell you guys, you're wearing a cape. You're literally wearing a mental cape. And that cape is the cape of responsibility. And you're going to find out when you first put that cape on, it's like a bathroom. You fling it over your shoulders. Yep, I'm a humanitarian. And then like, listen to about six of my audios. And then you're going, fucking cape is heavy. Oh shit, there's a lot of responsibility to this. Then you're doing it right. Because the cape of a humanitarian is heavy with massive responsibility. You are literally going to change people's lives. And you don't think about it when you go get that little bathrobe cape. You know, that's just a lightweight. That's just the idea. When you start to the point where your brain's not stopping to work, that's when you're finally starting to realize the magnitude of what you're about to do. Okay, I want you to hear this one more time. Scale, target of scale. Okay. A million seconds is 11 days. A billion seconds is 31 years. Think about that in the terms of money. Think about the type of responsibility that's going to go on your shoulders if you actually make it to billionaire. Think about the kind of responsibility that's going to go on the people's shoulders. There's going to be whales out there that I believe will end up being trillionaires. I've known personally, had friends who have been very, very wealthy, and they committed suicide because they could not handle the cake. They could not handle the responsibility because they had all the responsibility to make sure that they were running major projects for their family. And I believe they got the family business handed to them at too young of an age. They couldn't handle it. They blew up. So you gotta think about this now and be ready for this now because it's gonna hit you at some point. And it may not hit you when I'm talking to you now. It's probably gonna hit you. The responsibility that you're gonna have is when you're with your management team. And that cape of humanitarianism is all of a sudden gonna get really, really, really heavy. Okay. So again, if you're doing this for status, it's not worth it. If you're doing this because you really want to do it, then you're in the right place. If you're laying in bed right now in a state of stress trying to figure out your projects, you're absolutely in the right place. This you God wouldn't be bugging you to be thinking about this shit if you weren't in the right place. You're in the right place. So sorry, folks, this is some of the bad shit that happens when you're wealthy and when you're in the right place, when your mind is in the right place to handle that wealth, to handle that cape. That cape of responsibility is heavy, folks. So think about that now. Get that. Own it. Own it. Own what you're about to do. Accept it right now because you're going to have many people go through a feeling of guilt when they get the money. Especially to the kind of money we're going to get, okay? If we're right, if our guesses are right, we get the kind of money we think we're going to get. You go through this feeling, this really fucked up, weird feeling of guilt. And so part of what causes that feeling is when it starts to dawn on you, or when you start to, you already know it superficially, but it doesn't like get into your soul until the money's in hand, and you've got all the business meetings sitting there. And like we've been just thinking about it now, it doesn't get real until you're sitting in a board meeting. And then it's like, oh, fuck, you know, then it's really real. So I don't want you to go through that feeling, okay? And by knowing that it will probably happen to you, thinking about it now takes away the sharpness of when it's going to happen. Okay. So start to really start to love yourself. Start to have the faith that you're going to be able to do this. Have the confidence that you're going to walk in the right path. Believe in yourself. Because once you really rock, really feel the extreme amount of responsibility you're about to have, it's going to take your breath away. Because the power that comes with it is astronomical. And anybody that tells you the power is not an aphrodisiac is fucking lying to you. That is an absolutely true thing. And you've got to separate yourself from that aphrodisiac of power. Okay? So when you first get it, It's guilt. It's oddly, you go through almost the exact same steps of grief. Read the steps of grief. Because that's almost the exact same steps you're going to go through when you first get the money. Nobody fucking tells you this shit. What happens is you'll go through this shit and you'll say something to one of your new rich friends later and they laugh. Oh yeah, I did this and blah, blah, blah. They've all done this and nobody tells each other. They just like, oh, you're going to go through this. No, you're not. I'm going to take the edges off by you having knowledge. Knowledge is power. If you have knowledge of these things, they don't hurt you as bad, nor do they knock you off your feet. You're ready for it because you already know that a million seconds is 11 days and a billion seconds is 31 years. When you grasp the depth of how many people you're going to affect, it's going to be profound. Get used to it now. Start going into the, I know this is going to sound crazy. I know, but just trust me on this. Every time you see yourself in the bathroom mirror, I want you to look at yourself, look in your eyes of your own self and tell yourself, you're going to be an amazing humanitarian. And then tell yourself, yes, I am. You're going to manifest who you are. I didn't even fucking know what the word manifest meant until about a year ago. I didn't know that's what I've been doing my whole life, but that's what it is. Look into your own eyes. Get comfortable with your own self, looking at your own deep self. And then tell yourself, I'm going to be an amazing humanitarian. If you do this now, you're going through the process. You're pushing yourself through the process of accepting the power that you're about to be given, and you're not going to let it run amok. You're going through the process of doing this now, of owning what you're about to be, so it doesn't knock you sideways when it finally gets to you. It's way easier to put on this massive fucking mantle if you know what's going to get you when you put it on. So, I'm sorry. Thanks, Patriot Nurse. What is the most important thing is that you accept yourself for being a humanitarian now and be aware that you don't really do it right now. You think you are, but the depth of the power of this is not really going to hit you until after you have the money and you're sitting at your second meeting and they're giving you information about what they're going to let you do, what you're going to do, what you want to do. But then you always think, yeah, I want to do this, but you don't really know if they're going to be able to. They're going to tell you, yes, 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 yes. And that's when it's going to hit you. I want you to be ready for that. I want you to be ready for that hit for when you finally realize the power of what you are. So the way to do that is to start loving yourself right now and accepting yourself for the humanitarian that you were literally born to be. So every time you see yourself in the mirror from now until the time you are me, stop. Look at yourself in the mirror. Look into your own eyes. Get comfortable with yourself. And then tell yourself, I'm going to be a great humanitarian. And imagine the woman in the mirror looking back at you, well, if you're a girl, and saying, yes, I am. Start accepting it now because it'll make it so much easier for when it actually happens. This is shit nobody tells you. I know it sounds silly. I'm telling you, I know it sounds silly, but I wish I would have done it. I wish, because it knocked me sideways. It was hard. Here's another ugly little truth. This one nobody wants to hear this one. Nobody wants to hear this one. This one sucks. You're going to worry more about your kids and family after you get wealthy than you do right now. And that's a worry. It's going to go up a lot. Wealth puts a massive big red target on your back. And people will use anything to get some of your wealth. And it's not just, the danger of your kids get kidnapped or your dogs get kidnapped. That's just the basic physical danger that everybody's aware of, pretty much. But you also have to worry about fake friends, fake romance for your kids. Your kids having fake friends that want to, I love you, and they just want to love your kids' money, okay? So it's just, you worry. I didn't really know how much I worried about my family until I became poor. This past 5 years, I didn't really worry about anybody. I didn't worry about nobody. I just worried about myself. When I had money, oh, fucking a tweety bird, I drove myself nuts. I had security for my whole family. Because I had death threats. I don't take those very well. I just wear more guns and I hire more security. But you think about it all the time, and it's stressful. It's really, really, really stressful. It's really stressful. So you have to make sure the age of your kids right now is so different with information for different levels of wealth. You treat your kids differently based on when they get wealth, okay? And if they're little, okay, you have to start instilling them with the value of wealth. This is why the Family Governance Project is so important, especially if you have really young kids. Because you want those kids to grow up with a humanitarian mentality. Save, 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 share, share, share. And so you get your kids involved in humanitarian projects from the time they can write. If they can write, you have to have them in your humanitarian projects, because you're gonna train their brains to think the correct way so that your wealth will not be lost in three generations like it usually is. So, you're going to get your kids into wealth, family wealth management as fast as, the younger they are, the more important it is to get them in. If they're in high school, college, something like that, you got a whole different set of problems if you become instantly wealthy. High school kids are really, really, really the most difficult thing to have when you become instantly wealthy. Nobody tells you this, but the problem with high school kids is they're at their brain development and the age they are and just all of the things that's going on with their bodies and their minds and all their massive shift from child to adult, they often do not have the ability to keep their mouth shut. And even though mom may love their child and believe their child would never tell a secret, mom's wrong, okay? I've seen this happen with more than one client. Oh, bad. Kids cannot keep their mouth shut. Not at all. So, what I tell my clients is if you have high school kids, you need to consider moving. And you need to move to an area where it's a very small town. Or you need to move to an area where you need to move away from where you are if your kids are in high school, middle school, not so much middle school, but high school. And the reason being is they will not be able to keep their mouth shut until their brains, kids' brains don't quit growing until they're 26 years of age. So until they're 26, you don't really know if they actually have the ability to keep their mouth shut or not. It's unfortunately, it's just the way the human brain works. So what happens is, people that have gotten a lot of money that had high school kids often ended up with those high school kids being kidnapped. So I always, 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 if I've got a client that's gonna have a shit ton of money, I say you've got to set your child down with security and you've got to walk through every single thing about why they have to do what they have to do. Or you don't tell them anything until they're 26 years old. You know your child and you know how your child normally will behave, but a kid in high school, 13 to 21, their whole world revolves around them. They can't comprehend danger. They don't think it applies to them. They believe that, oh, you're just being overprotective. They believe a lot of really incorrect thoughts. Because of that, they trust their friends. And they tell their friends that you're now stinking wealthy. And then those friends tell the bad people, and then a bad day happens. This is what happens every single time. As I got older and my kids went through high school, I moved when my kids were in the middle of high school, and it was horrific. It was horrible. The kids were so mad at me. It was really, really bad. I got concerned for my family's safety again, and I talked to my security guy. And he said, "Look, Park," he said, "I can stop all this shit." He says, "But you got to be okay with what I'm about to do to your kids." I go, "What are you talking about?" He said, "I'm going to show them some pictures." And he says, "If I show your kids these pictures, they'll start to listen to me." So I said, "Do it." And he basically scared the kids straight. He showed my daughter some pictures of some kids that he had rescued and how badly, badly, badly they had been beaten. He talked to them about all different kinds of clients and what these kids had done and different kinds of reactions. So I talked to her after this whole thing and I said, "Listen," I said, "You seriously cannot talk about any of this stuff. It puts us all in danger. And even though, you think this is not real, you've lived, we moved once already. You know what happened to us. We went from that house to this house. So you can't ever talk." And she never did. But it took me seeing what happened to my own daughter before I realized there had to be a different way. But for several of my, well, I'm thinking of three, I have three different clients that have their teenage daughters. And it seems to always be the girls, because the girls can't keep their mouth shut. But that is one of the most difficult issues, is getting rich when you have teenage kids, because they don't have the ability to keep their mouth shut. So don't just make assumptions about your teenage kids. Get a security team and then have them tell you what to do. Say, look, I want you to talk to my kids. I don't know how to be sure that my kids are safe. Can you help me? And that's what I think I would do now. I don't have kids now, but I think that is what I would do now. If you have it, you know, if you've got a child that's completely out of control, I would still say move. It just depends on you and your child and the situation you're in. The other thing is that this is a fucked up thing too. I've had clients who are divorced, and the child spends half the time with the other parent. And the client is like, I fucking hate Joe. I don't want him to have nothing. I don't want to pay for security for Joe. You know, he's an asshole. He did this to me. He took this, that, and you think, okay, so we're not talking about Joe. We're talking about his child. So you need to have your lawyer, depending on how the relationship is, no matter how much you hate this son of a bitch, or how much you hate this bitch, if you're a guy and it's a girl that's giving you a bad time, no matter how much you hate your ex doesn't fucking matter, okay? And you should not, by any stretch of the imagination, feel any kind of negative way that your ex is about to benefit, okay? What you should be focused upon is that you're taking care of your child. And I know this is going to piss some of you the fuck off, especially those that hate their exes, but you need to make sure that if you've got kids of age that are not protected, if you end up with, you know, $1 billion, you're more of a target than a millionaire. So depending on what your wealth is, you need to make sure that your child is also protected. So talk to the ex. Say, hey, I've got this newfound wealth, and I had an inheritance, and I believe I might be, due to the wealth, our daughter might be a target for criminals. So my security is advised that I need to have coverage for her. And you will have private security here. And I hope you agree to it. And if not, they'll just be posted at your house. They'll be outside. It is difficult. They have advised me that it is difficult to maintain our daughter's safety at the current home you live in right now. And I have a $2.5 million house that my security team has suggested that you move to. Here's the house. Here's pictures. I need you to keep this in confidence. And I'm not giving you this house. You can have this. You can live in this house as long as our daughter is there. This house belongs to my trust. I just want to make it available for you so we can keep our daughter safe and everything's fine. If you can't say that to him or her in a civil tongue, which I understand, there are some asshole exes. I get it. I understand. I mean, I have friends that have bad exes. I get it. If you can't talk to them in a civil manner, have an attorney do it. But it depends on how much money you get. If it's a couple $1 million, don't listen to any of this shit. If you're looking at $200 million, the number is over $500 million, then yeah, you're a serious target. And you need to make sure your kids are protected. I believe there are some of us that will get that much money. So you just need to have your kids protected. And, you know, a lot of people don't even think about, you know, having, making sure their kid has protected when they're over their exes, because they're so fucking hate their exes so bad. And for a criminal, fuck, that's the best day to have a bad day. Is, look, she's not protected over there. She's got fucking armed guards wanting her over here. The kid's like fully fucking protected over here. Once she's with her dad, well, shoot, the dad doesn't even pick her up at time from school. We'll just snatch her up. And she gone. So it's not about your ex. It's about your kid. So talk to your security team. Have them look at the house. Have them look at it before you go in there and make any kind of offers. Or have your security team, your team head, go talk to them and your lawyer. That way you don't even have to if they piss you the fuck off. Okay? Just, there's a will, there's a way. The thing is, there's some really ugly stuff about being wealthy, and don't talk about that either. It is critically, 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 critically important that you have wealthy friends, okay? Critically important. I'm looking to see who's in here. Garden chefs in here. I don't see any of the other admins. We have a group of 9 people. Garden chef is one of them. And what happens when you go up to the kind of level you're about to go up to? You're going to notice that everybody around you is on payroll. Everybody. And the more wealth you have, the more people around you that are going to be on payroll, that your life is going to simply be required, okay? You have to remember that as time goes by, you're going to make friends with them, okay? One of my projects when I've been a humanitarian for a long time, I just didn't know there was a name for it. When I lived in Vegas, it drove me nuts to see all the homeless people. So I figured out a way to get them off the street by giving them free cell phones and giving them a dialer and a script so they could call. They were the people that you hate to call you up and sell you shit. These people would call people and they would sell them products. And as they sold more products, all of the profit that they were making, I was getting them into a weekly hotel. And then from weekly hotel, I got them into a monthly apartment, and then some of them, they were getting from an apartment to a house. So they were really upgrading their lives. I'm getting people off the streets. I'm so excited about it. Well, I got to the point where I had enough money from what all these people were doing. They were all in apartments. Everybody was good. And so I started saving aside money to get a call center so I could have a place of business where we could get more people able to come in and get them off the streets. I trusted the very first person that I gave a cell phone to, and she had gotten herself completely off the street. She was in an apartment. She was doing really, really, really well. I thought she was my friend, and I forgot the golden rule. There's always an imbalance of power in a relationship if they're on a payroll. No matter how close you get to that person, that imbalance of power never goes away. None of these people will dare tell you to your face that you're wrong, or they do things that, or they would do things that would make you upset because it affects your bottom line. The balance of power is completely, it's a complete imbalance. But because I had been working with this woman for almost 2.5 years, I felt she was my friend. We had been through thick and thin together. It had been a rough ride to get some of these fucking assholes off the streets. I mean, sometimes people want to help themselves, but they really are lying to you. But I made her my manager. I gave her the keys to the business. I taught her how to service the accounts and order stuff because I was still working a full-time job. So I was basically slowly giving over all the responsibilities to her. And once she had the key to the bank account, she immediately embezzled $80,000, bankrupted the business. And within 3 weeks, all those people that we had helped get off the street were back on the street again because they didn't have a job. They didn't have a second job. We were their job. We were their lifeline. You have to remember that it will be very, very, very easy to befriend people that are on your payroll. Don't do it. You're the boss. You're always going to be the boss, even when you don't want to be the boss. It's critically important that you have friends that are of your same wealth and caliber. Garden Chef and the 9 other of us, we are all going to be doing a project that is the same title, but the entire project is all independently run by each of us. I've given some of those projects out to other people too, but our group is going to work it as a group. What means is, I'm going to spend time with Garden, with the other 7 people that are not on payroll. And we will build the strength of what we're doing and help thousands of people. And at the same time, we can trust each other because we don't have an imbalance of power. We're all powerful. We're all independently wealthy. We all have other major projects. There's no imbalance of power between the 9 of us. We've taken a lot of extra steps to make sure there is no imbalance of power. Some of us in our group could not afford to buy Chinese Yellow Dragons. Those that could immediately stepped up and did. So we've had this give and take harmonic balance of people. It started out with a group of over 300 people, and the redhead is cranky. And so I just, as things got further and further along, it had to be a super loyal group. It had to be a very tight group. It had to be a group that believes strongly in the Second Amendment. It had to be a group that I felt that if I were to die, they'd stand up and carry the flag to save America. It had to be a group that we all feel we could go back to back and take on the fucking world and take out the deep state. This is the reason why I encourage you to make friends in people in these channels if they have the same type of projects you do. Because it will be very, 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 very lonely if you don't. Being wealthy and having no one in your realm of people that is not around you, that's not on payroll, leads to really bad things happening. And that imbalance of power will cause you to make stupid mistakes. And you could lose a lot because no matter what you feel about that person is paid by you. You have to have people around you that are not on the payroll. Otherwise, you will not realize and you will not maintain that formal line because you'll befriend them, because it'll be super easy to befriend them. When you go through heaven and hell with somebody, it's really easy to be friends with them, even if they're on the payroll, and then you'll forget and you'll make a stupid mistake. So, even when you're not around paid staff, there's still a target on your back. You end up spending more time with your assistants than you do with your loved ones. My personal assistant knew me better than my own kids did. because the hours and hours and hours I spent with her. Nobody tells you this shit. Plan for it now. Be ready. Get your feet up underneath you. Be ready. Fuck. Oh. I had a friend. I made a friend. This is really cool. I made a friend when I was really poor, before I ever got wealthy. Okay. She and I used to hang out on the beach in San Diego. And, this girl was a dork. I mean, she was just a total freaking klutz. She couldn't keep a job. She was never on time. I mean, just a total freaking fuck up. And totally expect everybody to just do whatever she wanted. Her center of balance was not right, okay? And my husband had passed away. And my husband died when I was 21. And my husband passed away, and I was having a really, really, really bad time. And I saw this girl that we both had known, and she was sitting on the beach because I lived on Mission Bay. She was sitting on the beach, and I said, "Hey, what's going on?" And she told me she was homeless. So I had an extra room, and I said, "Why don't you just come stay and hang out with me? That way you can get off the beach. You know, you don't have to be homeless. I've got a place you can stay." So I'm flying back and forth. I'm working on a grow, and I'm hanging out in San Diego, you know, going back and forth. And I have to go back home. There's an emergency. I go back home and I get a telegram, like a real telegram. And this was, I don't know, 80s, I guess, 90s, I guess. I can't remember when. Anyways, it's this thing, come back to San Diego right now. There'll be plane tickets for you at the airport. I need you to come back right now. It's an emergency, it's an emergency, it's an emergency. Holy shit. So I go to the airport, get on a plane, fly back, get first class, business class or high-end class plane tickets. And it was really amazing service, but it was just up and down. We just head back to San Diego. Like, it was only a 30-minute flight. I think I would have remembered the plane flight more if I hadn't happened what happened when I landed. When I landed, there's fucking paparazzi everywhere. She comes. This is a girl who's dirt poor. Okay, dirt poor. She comes. It's a plane that has. It's a little plane, so it doesn't go up to the thing where you get out on the jetway. This actually has a little door that comes down, and they put a ladder. The little plane. So she comes out, and all these people, this is clearly way before 9/11, all these people and camera people are there, and they're taking pictures. I'm like, "What in the hell have you done?" And she says, "Just come with me. I'll explain it when we get in the car. Just come with me." So her parents were billionaires, multi-millionaires, if not billionaires, crazy, crazy wealthy. They owned Wicks Furniture Company. And she was the sole inheritor of all of this. And her parents owned a what's it called? I want to say horse racing. She, they're on the racetrack. She inherited all of it because her parents accidentally drove their car off the side of Otay Mountain and they died in a crash. And so she became an instant millionaire overnight. In the entire time I had known her, I had no idea that she was wealthy. I had no idea, none. All of a sudden, it made perfect sense why she couldn't do shit. She had been pampered and, I mean, wealth beyond wealth from the time she could, like, speak. So, everybody that you meet has motives, whether or not they are wealthy or are they coming up wealthy. You're going to realize that everybody has motives. Everybody that you interact with have motives. My friend used to say, being a billionaire is like being a tall woman, blonde hair, long legs, big boobs, a perfect 10. The moment you enter the room, everyone wants to screw you. She, her whole life, was questioning the motives of everybody she interacted with. Because she learned over and over and over and over that people that weren't of the same income level that she had, she got burned a lot. So she decided to walk away from her whole family, walk away from all the wealth, and just be dirt poor to see if she could make friends with somebody. And she knew because I thought she was dirt poor living on a beach. Everybody has an agenda. Everybody. It may not be clear immediately, but at some point in the relationship, everybody's going to have an agenda, and the agenda is going to revolve around money. So you're going to meet you're going to know people that you haven't seen in a long time. They're going to have an agenda. I have the perfect opportunity for you. Just wait till you hear about this. And the more money you have, the bigger the agenda. Because they're going to have less and less fear for asking you for more and more money. This is the reason why. Every time you get wealthy, you're going to want to be at the top of a high-rise tower. You're going to want to be in a secluded compound. You're going to want to be with thorn trees around your property. Is because you are putting yourself distance between you and the people that are going to ask you for money. I don't have any fear of Garden Chef having an agenda, of all the other admins that I have in our group of having an agenda. And the reason being is we are wide open with each other. We all know, you know, we've all made sure we're all equal as we're going up. I know that if Garden Chef had, should I need $50 million, she would call me up and say, hey, Park, I need 50 mil. No agenda. She's just telling me what she needs. Where other people would hide what they want from you and get involved with you, get into your life, and eventually the subject of money comes up, and then they're going to tell you, I have a perfect opportunity. I need 50 million. That's the difference of people that are your real friends, your true friends, when you're wealthy, and those that have an agenda. This topic fucking sucks. I just want you to know that. This topic really fucking sucks. Because this is a fucked up fucking terrible fucking topic. Terrible topic. I had to learn this lesson over and over and over and over and over and over before I started wanting to live all by myself, before I wanted to live and separate myself from people that would ask me for money. I can't tell good people from bad people. So I could never tell the motives of people that I was interacting with. And I couldn't tell. I still can't do it today. It's the most annoying fucking thing ever. This is why I have a personal assistant. And I pay her very, very, very well. But even then, you know, she's on the payroll. So I have to even question her. But it takes getting burned a couple of times. And it takes getting burned a couple of times by people that you trust a lot before you really start to get that people actually have a motherfucking agenda. I still have not found a good way to give myself answers about the motives of the agendas of the people I interact with. See, right now, when everyone is not in that high wealth category, what you need to question is, can they pass a background security check with the White House? Okay, so if they go through that, then they're pretty much good enough for me. They're good enough for the Alliance, they're good enough for me. But after that, everybody that you add into your circle, you have to check and double check. So it's because I've been burned so badly by people I really, really trust that I now have everybody that is going to be in my circle. I take the information to my security team. All of us in this group, we're all going to be a strong network because we're using the exact same security team. My guys can go work for Garden Chef, and they'll work flawlessly at Garden Chef's events, and hers will come with me. We are all on the same path of humanitarianism. So there's no agenda between any of us. We're all equally yoked, and we all have our own path that we're about to walk. There's zero jealousy. We're all amazing at what we do. So align yourself with people that do not have an agenda with you. It's very important to do that. If you don't have friends that are about to RV, figure out who you have in your life that doesn't have an agenda and go talk to them about getting currency so that you're not going up by yourself. When I say going up, I mean getting wealthy. No. So Hamilton Dragon says, I have a saying that I teach my kids. Do not lend money out. If you do, you will have to ask for it back. Those that borrow get upset if you tell them, I can't get mad also. So if you keep and do not lend it, regardless, they will get mad. Money in your pocket is better not to lend out, so there are rules you should have. Well, I have a different rule. I appreciate what you said, but what I say is this. If somebody asks you for money and you give them money, you need to tell yourself you're giving them a gift, no matter what they say. If they tell you they're going to give it back, pay you back, whatever what they say, you have to accept in your mind that you're giving them a gift and you don't expect it back because you're just not. You have to think of it as a gift. If they actually do pay you back, hey, cool. But don't expect it at all. It just doesn't happen. Just give it as a gift and just it's gone. Okay. Don't think it's coming back. So how do I give people gifts? Okay. In the beginning, I used to be all about the papers, the documents, the feedback, and, you know, the ROI, all that fucking shit. That don't matter at all. Because that'd be a lie. I did have a few people pay me back, but the ones that paid me back were far less than the ones that didn't pay me. So I had to get to the point where if I give money away, I'm given a gift, okay? So after I got to that conclusion, I was fine. I live with that. That's good. I can afford to do that occasionally. So then it was, what is your criteria for giving money away? And for the longest time, I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't figure out if you've seen any of my my household documents and stuff. I'm fucking anal retentive about A plus B equals C. I want to have a list of criteria of how this is going to go, because, you know, if you're giving stuff away, if you don't have a list of criteria, there's fuckers out there that will sue you and say, oh, you're being unequal. Well, if you don't have a list of criteria out, you can't go back and go, these were the requirements of what I wanted. So you have to have criteria. Yeah, I didn't learn that right the first way. Don't do what I do. Do the right way. Make a list of criteria, because otherwise you'll have nothing but grief. Okay. So you make the criteria, and it just makes everything a lot easier when you're trying to give money away. So I came up with all these different kind of criteria, and I kept changing it. And I finally ended up with one criteria. Okay. They have to entertain the shit out of me. If their presentation doesn't entertain me and get my mind to working, I'm not giving them a gift. I don't care who they are. If it's not entertaining, because if I'm going to give away money, I need a show. So that was it. That's how I ended up doing my criteria. If I'm going to give a gift, I say, yeah, I'll listen to you. But what I won't tell them is, you have to be entertaining. You have to engage my mind or you fuck you. I don't tell them what the criteria is. You only have to tell them what the criteria is if they sue you or if somebody sues you because they say you have no criteria. Oh, no, you have a criteria. That's when you show your criteria. But it has to be thought-provoking. It has to be, whatever your criteria is, okay? So I have a little tablet that I grade their thing with, and then I keep those documents in case I ever get sued for you're not doing the right thing. You're giving money away the wrong way. No, I have criteria. Here you go. And really, seriously, you need to keep all those documents, because at some point you will be known well enough and some asshole will sue you for this. So, keep all your criteria. Make your set of criteria and then grade them as to whether or not they fit that criteria. And that's what I do. And so if I'm going to let people borrow, quote unquote, means I'm going to give them a gift, they have to meet that criteria. And if they don't, I won't. And that's one way to do it. The second time I got wealthy, I got a lot of heat for telling some people no that they thought I should say yes to. So I was like, fuck that. I'm not going to do it that way this time. So the second time I got wealthy, I went to my lawyer and I said, look, it's up to you to make all the decisions on this. This is what I want to have done, but your word is going to be the final say. That was great because then I could tell people, oh no, you want to apply for this? Go talk to the lawyer. He's taking care of all the criteria. He's the one that makes the final decision. Beautiful. I was left out of it and nobody got mad. So it just different ways to do things, but nobody really tells you that everybody has an agenda. And so if you know that now, it can prevent you from being aware, being armed with knowledge is so much better than not knowing shit and then just getting shocked. Okay. So once you have, I've been asked this before. When does the money not matter? When is there a tipping point where no matter how much money you get, your life doesn't really change? Where is your tipping point with being wealthy? Okay. After about $50 million. After about $50 million, there's really not much you're going to do to impact your life. So if you want to live a billionaire lifestyle, it just barely requires $50 million. You don't own a $500 million yacht, but you can rent one because you only rent them a couple weeks a year. You don't have to have your own private plane. You can always fly private, and your budget allows you to rent any home anywhere in the world. You can rent a $50,000 a month home, roughly around. Right around the 5 million, 50 million, excuse me, 50 million mark. You can still have the same lifestyle as somebody who's worth about 250 million. Okay. There gets to be a joint that changes, a path that changes. And right, it's usually right around 50 million. That's where I like to be. I want to be 50 million or more. Because you can have the same exact lifestyle at 50 million as you can when you have 250 million. There gets to be a point in your wealth where you hit a spending ceiling. And unless your whole goal is to spend all your money, you'll get to a point where it's everything's fine. If you take $50 million and you put it into a bank and let them collect the interest off that, at 50 million you'll probably get about 10% interest because they'll do a more riskier stuff, but you'll probably get closer to 10% interest. So then that means your spending budget for that year is 5 million every year. I mean, literally, could you get along getting spending 5 million a year? I mean, is that enough? Yeah, it is. It's really hard to spend more than 5 million a year, unless you have a yacht. That's why when you need to have like 250 million, you have a yacht. But it's 50 million a year allows you $5 million per year if you never touch the if you never touch the starting money. So that's, if you're wondering, where do you have to get before it feels like you've got this outrageous, lifestyle like I'm a billionaire, it's about 50 million. Because at 50 million, you can rent all these things part-time. You'll have enough money to rent all these things part-time. At a billion, you'll own them all. So it's the same. Right about the same life. One of the hardest lessons. Can I expand on the criteria of being a personal assistant and what their duty should be? Yeah, I can do that. First, you have to decide what you need a personal assistant for. What do you want them to do? Do you want them to take notes and make your calendar and stay with you all day long? Do you want them to be setting up appointments? First, you have to figure out what you want them to do. My personal assistant has a very hard time. I'm going to pay my personal assistant way more money. I have a fairly serious disability. And it revolves about pulling memory out fast enough to maintain information and conversation. My personal assistant literally has to be my memory and has to be able to think very fast. So what I'm looking for in a personal assistant is someone that nearly has a, I'm looking for somebody that has a photographic memory, quite frankly. It's not that I don't remember, it's just I can't bring it out. So I'll get stuck. Like I'll know the thing, I'll know it, and I can't, they're just forget it. It's just not coming out. When Sabrina's in the channel, you guys hear her give me a prompt. You and Jim too, Jim will prompt me. And they know I get stuck. So instead of just letting my brain just like it's in gear, we ain't going nowhere. They'll pop up and say, they'll give me the hint so I can get back on track. So I ask a tremendous amount from a personal assistant. I don't think that's normal at all. The way I've seen friends use personal assistant is vastly different than I do. And I can talk about that. My friends use personal assistants to basically run all of their family calendars. Their personal assistants make sure that everybody in their family gets a birthday card or a birthday present or flowers. The personal assistant goes and does all the shopping for her. The personal assistant goes and gets her dry clean wear, takes dry clean. The personal assistant goes to the mailbox, goes and delivers things to lawyers or delivers things to the team. They're your Girl Friday. Everybody is going to be different. Some of you, your personal assistant is just going to, sometimes I've seen friends where their personal assistant is actually a combination of a chef and a personal assistant. And I don't know if they started out as a chef first or a personal assistant first. I'm not sure how that worked. But I'm thinking of two friends in particular. Their personal assistants could cook like a chef, like really good. And so they were paid by the hour, no matter if they were taking notes or if they were cooking, they were paid by the hour. So I believe I shouldn't I believe that both of these people hired real chefs to teach their personal assistants how to cook. And because these girls could cook, I mean, really good food, really ornate, wealthy, like beautiful food. So that's something you can do with your assistant is when you're in an interview, like, would you be willing to take lessons? Those girls were very excited to get those skills, to take those lessons, because it just, amped their skills in their private life tremendously. So I've seen people do it as a dual kind of a thing. I've seen other people have assistants where they're literally just taking care of their calendars and they're interacting with the executive assistant. Your executive assistant usually doesn't come to your house or where you're at if you're not on premise with your business. Your executive assistant is at the site or the event or the project, whatever it is. And they communicate back and forth either through you to you directly or through your PA. Their executive assistant, for some people, they use them as a project manager that they keep on every project, but they're doing way more things than a project manager, and their pay is like double what a project manager would be. So it just depends what you want them to do. And this is the reason why it's really, really important right now to try to imagine what you think your life is going to be like and what you're going to need these people to do, and then write a list of what you want a PA to do. You don't have to interview for a PA. The hardest part you're going to have, DDS, is to figure out what you want the PA to do. Once you have a list of what you want the PA to do, you're going to give that list of requirements of your executive assistant to your hiring manager and or your or hiring team. And they're going to find you people to interview that have that criteria, and then you'll pay them for that. Okay. I look for some really crazy skills. I need somebody that has nearly photographic memory. I need someone who can has stenographer skills or is willing to take stenography classes. The bonuses is if the not a requirement, but it's it man, it makes my life a lot happier, is if they scuba dive, because I'll take my PA and go diving, because it's a big perk for somebody. If you like to dive, you like to dive. It's in your bones, and you go anytime you can go. So why not share something, a fun activity, with somebody that appreciates it if you appreciate it. Oh yeah, having a dive buddy is fun. My PA, I have had two PAs that did not dive, and I asked them, do you have any interest in learning how to dive? Oh God, that'd be fabulous. And they both took lessons and they were great. So you just have to figure out what you want for your personal assistant, what you want them to do. Start right now imagining what you kind of tasks you want for them. Some people have their personal assistants go pick up their kids after school. Some people use their security team to go pick up the kids after school. You figure out who you want to do what. Think about all that stuff now and start writing it out. Start manifesting your life. Start actually writing out how you want it to be, because it's coming, folks. So be ready. Get your feet underneath you. Get ready. Plan this as if it's already happened, because it's coming. Pretty cool, huh? There is going to be, fucked up. This is a fucked up topic too. I don't like this one either. So this is bad. I don't even want to talk about this one because I get mad. So I'm like, oh fuck, I'm gonna get mad. I'm gonna get my joint. Oh, this one sucks, folks. You're gonna get criticized by people that don't even know you. Okay. There is a lot of hate that goes on when you're ultra wealthy. Okay. Super left-wing individuals think that every billionaire out there, every multimillionaire out there, when they're not swimming around in gold, has a secret agenda of trying to ruin the lives of everyone in poverty to hang on to their own resources. Okay? Stupid fuckers. It's just fucking evil. They think you're evil, okay? You're gonna get these stupid fucking left-wing liberals. I swear to God, you just, oh, this sucks. This sucks so bad. Okay, they really believe that your whole goal in life is to keep all your resources to yourself so they get none for them, okay? And you can't argue with them, okay? They do not understand. They do not understand basic economics, okay? So, many, many of you are going to be paper billionaires. Many of you will. You don't even know it yet, but this is what's going to happen. especially if you begin to plan worldwide operations. You will become a billionaire. There's just no way around it. And the way you become a billionaire is not the way you think. There's a special term for this. It's called a paper billionaire. Okay. What does this mean, a paper billionaire? It means you own shares in companies that you built that are now valued by everybody else at incredible amounts of money. In order for you to get those shares to worth that much, because you are going to have retail businesses as well, family governance businesses, there'll be retail businesses that have a humanitarian edge to them. But you're going to have to find and build companies and products that people find valuable enough to pay for. You have to hire people at competitive rates, otherwise your competition is going to hire them. Okay. Nobody I ever met who's sitting on hundreds of millions of dollars, or dare I say billions of dollars in cash, is sitting around making motherfucking paper airplanes and lighting cigars with $100 bills. It just fucking doesn't happen. They're paper billionaires. When you have $1 billion, okay? When you are making $1 billion, your company has got you up. I'm not talking about $1 billion from, you're going to be able to set up programs for the humanitarians that you're going to give away your humanitarian stuff. You're also going to be setting up family governance offices. And these offices will be businesses that have humanitarian arms to them. The family governance is business, folks. I don't know if you guys figured that out yet. They all have humanitarian projects attached to them, but that is a business. You're going to make money from, you have the opportunity to make money in that business. The money that you make from that business can be funded or flowed into those humanitarian projects you have. So if you fund your businesses, then you have lifelong income that flows into your humanitarian projects. So those of you who have business marketing and have experience in business, you are going to be the bomb for being a humanitarian, because you understand business. It's the same exact thing. So you can still give away whatever you're giving away for humanitarian stuff. You can still do all of that, but your family governance at some point has to have a business big enough that it's going to earn enough money that's going to make the money flow into your humanitarian projects, because that's what's going to take you from 100 years or 25 years of being funded to, you know, multi-generation. And if you teach the younger generation coming up about how to do these kind of things, they in turn keep doing the same thing because they see they're getting paid. They didn't have to do really anything. It was just a different process. And by doing these processes, it doesn't hurt them at all. And they make money and they learn how to make money generationally. It's different types of learning. The first learning is how to make the money. The second generation comes is how to save the money. And the third generation comes and has to maintain the money. What happens is the third generation spends all the money for everything because they've lived a life of Sam. Nobody's ever taught them how to continue and to continue to get payment in perpetuity, how to keep it going. Nobody teaches that kid. So when that third generation comes, woohoo, we spend it all, okay? Every $1 billion that a person is worth, the enterprise, the business that they are running, generates in excess of $10 billion in value for the consumers around them. This is the reason why you becoming a multimillionaire, dare I say billionaire, is so important, because you're going to be learning how to build wealth in your areas and your companies and your communities. And that wealth is going to be focused on fixing or taking over when your humanitarian money is gone. Think big, folks. Think big. You got this. You think I was going to tell you this at the very beginning? Oh, fuck no. You might have run away. You're ready now. You're ready to hear this terrible shit now. Think big, folks. You are about to get fuck you money to teach yourself anything you want to learn. Okay? What you want to learn is how to fund your humanitarian projects. What businesses can you do or start to fund your humanitarian projects for when the money runs out of your gift? If you have your gift slated to run out in 25 years, how are you going to continue to run your humanitarian projects? There's only one way, folks. You have to have a business supporting it. So you're turning in these humanitarian projects that you want them to fund, okay? You're going to be paid money, okay? You're going to be paid money if you're working in these different companies. Your family governance is going to give you some money. That's what you put in there. Now, you can either blow through all that money, or you can start teaching the next generation and causing wealth to stay in your own community, because you're going to teach that next generation how to keep the money in perpetuity by your family governance programs. This is why this family governance program is so important. Those of you that don't have a business background and you want to do a business, you might want to step into the position of whatever the family business is going to be and getting that up off the ground. Maybe that's what you're actually thinking and your humanitarian project is something totally different. Do you hate me right now? Because I'm giving you more fucking ideas. Sorry, but not really. You think of your projects. Think of your projects right now, okay? Is that a project a business more than it is a humanitarian project? If it is a business, make that part of your family governance. Use a different thing as your humanitarian project. They can flip, folks. You can flip them either way. At some point, the money that we're going to be getting from the alliance is going to run out. What are you going to do when it runs out? They're going to ask you this question, okay? What's your answer? You have better have an answer. You know what my answer is going to be? My answer is going to be, I'm going to take my parking pots and I'm going to open them up to retail sales to sell to the $440 trillion agriculture industry. And the profits that I get from those pots will be what I will continue to fund my humanitarian project for the next 200 or 300 years. Bada boom, bada bing. What are you going to do, folks? What are you going to do? You don't have to do anything. You can just turn your project in, okay, and get the funding for your project. You don't have to make these kind of decisions right now. I'm just putting this out there so that when you get your funds, you go, I could buy a bunch of fucking houses. I can go do all kinds of crazy stuff. Or I could figure out a business, have my wealth management team advise me on a business that I would like to do and build this company and have a percentage of the sales go to fund my humanitarian project. I'm telling you this right now, not for you, not for your knowledge right now. I want you to remember this in 5 years. Write this down what I'm telling you, folks. Because in 2 to 3 years, we're going to see all of the inventions that have been kept hidden, okay? Those inventions are going to need funding. Those inventions are going to need businesses that build them and support them, okay? There's your business, folks. Watch what is coming. You're going to see things, inventions, amazing things come out. And something is going to go, oh, hell, I want to do that. You reach out to the inventor and you say, you strike a deal to start that as a business. You're going to have your wealth management team run through all this, but all these new inventions are coming. All of them. And there's nobody thinking about, what am I going to do after the money runs out? This is what I used to do for a living, folks. I used to get companies completely motherfucking vertical. You can do this, okay? But remember what I said about 11 seconds and how many years for a billion and a million? This is the shit nobody tells you about until you're knee deep in alligators. So anyway, just stuff for you to think of. I kept telling people about getting a house and making the house look nice and, you know, be on point for what you are, okay? And I kept thinking to myself, that fucking sucks. That's not what I'm trying to tell them, but I can't figure out how to tell them what I'm trying to tell them. I can't figure out how to explain it to you. Well, I got an epiphany today. Being cranky sometimes works, I guess. I don't know. When you, this is what happened to my cannabis growers. I got to go along on the ride with a lot of these multi-million dollar cannabis growers because I taught them how to do it. I only knew how to do it on a little scale. These guys were like 20, 30, 40 times bigger than me. And I got to go on the ride, watch them go through the first time of it. Because I had done it on a littler scale, I was felt confident saying, look, I can show you how to do this on a big scale. So now I got massive confidence with taking these kind of companies vertical because I've done it very successfully. But this is the crazy shit. They hate you when you're first talking about going in and starting a cannabis business, okay? Everybody around you, they hate you. The city governments, all the shit, they hate you, right? Until they figure out that you're a blessing. They figure out that you're creating jobs, and those jobs are doing commerce in the city, and the income for the city is getting higher and higher, and they want to make sure you don't move your headquarters someplace else, okay? They do not want to lose you because they're looking at you as Mr. Piggyback or piggy bank and Mr. Job Creator. Okay, you are sliced bread to them. You are fabulous. Now here's the ugly part. Here's the ugly part. In the past, now I don't know how things are going to be in the future because we don't know how anything's going to be in the future, but politics. Business will always intertwine. Even if you didn't want to be involved in politics, they can't, they knock down your door, okay? Politicians basically, this is awful. This is awful. This is awful. Damn it. Politicians have what I call legalized bribery. And what their legalized bribery is financial support for different company corporations and companies. And they don't call it bribery. No, that's not the word they use. I think it's bribery. They call it lobbying. Okay? It's fucking bribery. Okay? It's grift, okay? It's bribery. No. It's lobbying, lobbying, lobbying. You have to give these fuckers money. You have to give politician money, help them get elected, help them get reelected, because then they pass laws that at least, at the very least, don't harm you, okay? And this was a massive, massive problem in the cannabis industry. Because it was very, 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 very hard to find people to bribe. But that's exactly the way it is. And it's a terrible truth. And they don't tell you this. You go in and you try to do things the normal way where, fuck, I don't want to have anything to do with politics. And they're like, oh, you're not going to support me? Well, fuck you. Oh, I'm doing eminent domain on your property. Fuck you and your ranch. I got it now. They will fuck you if you don't support them. It is a weird dance that you do with politics. And this, they don't call it bribery. They don't call it, they call it lobbying. Okay. Politics are driven by for-profit corporations. Politics are driven by Moderna. Politics are driven by Bayer. Politics are driven by IBM. Okay? They're all driven by for-profit corporations. So if you're not playing the game, you get run over. Okay? When you become very wealthy, these fuckers, they come after your money. And they take it either in harsh business sanctions, or they give massive contracts to people that you compete against. So there's multiple ways they can fuck you when you have money. And if you don't know this, It's not good, folks. It's really not good. So you need to really be careful.
Eliminate, but I'm trying to
So you just need to know this because it's real important, folks. It's very important. Just be careful. This is one of the reasons why I say be a ghost. Hide behind your corporate name. Don't let nobody know who you are, especially if you get hundreds of millions. Don't let nobody know who you are. Hide. Because these politicians, once you get to a certain level, yeah, they'll be knocking on your door. Oh, help me. So I don't know how politics is going to be in the future. I pray to God that this is stopping. I hope it does. But that was the past. You know, there, I talked about frenemies and friends, okay? And I didn't really touch on the status thing. You have to be really careful that you don't start playing a status game, okay? Don't show off. When you're new, when you're freshly wealthy, you don't have any position in the social hierarchy of being wealthy. You don't have none. You get that, and that's impacted by how happy you are. You draw people to you. It doesn't work the other way around. If you're up, positive, doing well, then people are going to be, they're going to be drawn to you. If you're worth $400 million and somebody else is worth $500 million, you get to the point where it doesn't take away from you how much or how little the other person has. Because once you get to a certain comfort level with wealth, money loses value. It becomes worthless. It's favors. The money, the real money of the rich, is favors. And so you lose all the people that are playing high score, money matters games. Once you get to a certain level that you are comfortable with yourself and you stop that, you go over that threshold, it's really bizarre because then money doesn't matter. It's about favors. Everything else can be done. It doesn't matter. So it gets to be a status game. The thing is when you're trying to get over these different thresholds and you're setting yourself goals. Don't set yourself goals that are going to kill yourself, okay? Say you're worth $4 billion, okay? If you're running the business part, once you're getting to the part where you're about over with this, this is like 10, 20 years from now, remember that the numbers don't mean a difference. It's how happy you are. Once you get to a certain point to add that extra 5 million, the amount of extra work and the extra stress that happens is not worth it. One of the things that happens when, like, it'll happen about 2 years after you're wealthy, maybe longer. But what happens is that what do you give somebody who has everything? People will end up giving you crazy, crazy shit. Material things are, you don't have any value in material things. It's personal experiences. That's the most valuable thing you can give somebody that has everything is a personal experience. An event, something that makes memories. The making memories are way, 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 way more important than any kind of material gift when you're wealthy, because the gift will, get thrown in the pile with all the other shit you don't really want, that the memories stay with you forever. So people don't know what to give you when you get really wealthy, so they'll just send you all kinds of crazy random shit. Yeah, it's weird. Material gifts, they lose, like, you don't even you're interested in what's in the packages, because it's just something else to do that, and it's usually something you already have, so it makes no sense. The original art, that was the only thing. When I got wealthy, that was the only thing that rang my bell, is original art. But other than that, nothing else. Oh, and know this is gonna sound wrong, and good maple syrup. I'm a total fiend for good maple syrup. Everything else didn't matter. How embarrassing. One of the most difficult things to do, is to find true love when you're wealthy. I hope and pray every one of you has real love right now before the wealth comes. I really do, because it will be incredibly difficult after the RV. I hope you find the Philosopher's Stone. Because I was a female grower, if I had gotten into a relationship with someone, I would lose my reputation. So for me, because the first two times I went up, my income was built on cannabis. I was it, having a relation love interest relationship was not going to happen, because I wasn't going to give up what I did, wasn't going to let anybody take credit for what I was doing. So it gets really hard, super hard, to find true love. And when you are not wealthy, you have struggles that you go through, I remember when my husband was alive and we wanted to buy this stud horse and we didn't have any money, and we were actually reduced to rolling all the way down to nickels to pay for this stud horse. And that's real love, It's real struggles, real shit. It was fun. Okay. It was hard at the time, but it was fun. Now, yeah, being a single man, a possible billionaire, it's absolutely hard. Successful single individuals, they want a solid partner that can hold their own, and that's where things get complicated. You want to meet somebody that is in your same game, okay? You want to meet somebody that you're evenly yoked with. It's way difficult. It's that you're on the payroll, same kind of mentality. There's always a power dynamic that's unequal. You want to meet somebody who's in that same income bracket or level of finance bracket. It gets really difficult because less than 11% of the billionaires in the world are female. Those same numbers go down for millionaires, trillionaires, less than 11%. Okay? That means there's one female billionaire for every 9 males. Out of 100 billionaires, only 11 of them are female. Worse, most of those 11 are 60 years or older. So guys, you're going to have a really, really hard time unless you're in your 60s or unless you like really older women. So what most of my friends who are super wealthy have done is they settled and they found somebody that they felt made a good life partner with. And they just kind of hope in time that that kind of works out to kind of like a love thing. But it's extremely, extremely, extremely difficult to find true love again when you're wealthy. I had really, really, really hoped that before I went up this time that I would meet somebody, because once you're on the top of the mountain, forget it. It's next to impossible. You want to get called all kinds of bad names when you're wealthy? Go ahead and complain about something. You can't complain about shit, because your kind of problems that you're going to be complaining about, you're not their same problems. All the people that you have, everything you complain about goes through the "you're rich though" filter, okay? That's what everybody says to you. And Biggie Small, that's who it was. I knew the name of that. More Money, More Problems. I talked about this earlier, but I could not remember the singer. It was Biggie Small. God bless America. Thank you, Lord. So this is exactly the way it is. So all of your friends right now, if you complain about any of the problems you're about to have, they're gonna look at you. They're like, you're not connected. They're gonna think that you're just wrong, completely wrong for complaining, okay? So you ever wonder why the rich guys always play golf? The real rich? It's because golf's expensive and they only take their super close inner circle and their other rich people with them when they go play golf. And they pretty much use golf as therapy sessions to just complain about everything. It's pretty funny. You need to learn how to play golf and get rid of your stress. If you get to a certain if you get to a certain level of wealth, and I think some of us will, it won't matter that you do all these different things. It won't matter that you have all these different talent, skills, whatever. Okay, but none of that's going to matter. Everybody is only going to see you as the money. That's it. No matter what you are, no matter what you do, no matter how cool you are, no matter where you go, no matter what you do in society, it doesn't matter at all. They're only going to see your money. If you Money is so important to our society that people will always believe it's the money and not some characteristic of you. Okay. And this is really true. If you, if you get the money first, okay, and then you go after something, your passion, okay, they're gonna see, is this just like a pet project that you're just throwing money at for entertainment, okay? So, I think the best example of that is Kanye West, because he went from artist to billionaire. But do you think somebody like Jeff Bezos or Bill Gates or Warren Buffett is gonna do their thing the other way around? No, they didn't. They built a billionaire first. They didn't go back and forth. They don't have painting or acting or you no matter what they tell you, you still see them as a billionaire who paid their way to fame. They didn't become fame. They didn't start out as famous and then become a billionaire. It didn't work that way for them. Your wealth overshadows all your other characteristics. I believe that most of us are going to be at the 100 million mark or higher. And probably more 500 million, I think. Once you get to a certain point, as the numbers get higher and higher up, the numbers get smaller and smaller. I don't know how many millionaires there are. I probably should have written that down, but there's only 2,780 billionaires in the world. Okay. So, even if that tripled the number or quadrupled the number at 500 million, that means that, say, there's less than 5,500 millionaires in the world. So your choices are very different than your choices are right now. It's not just your relationship that will be different. Everything about your life will be completely different. And no matter how much you want to tell yourself you didn't change much, your wealth is going to change everything in your environment. And on top of it's going to change the way you make decisions and the processes of those decisions and those decisions and how they relate to your current relationships. Fucked up, huh? You're going to feel isolated. It feels very lonely at the top. I probably will spend a great deal of my free time with my nine friends, because I know that they do not have an agenda, and I know that I can hang with them, and they're not going to be asking for all kinds of shit from me. You'll get to the point, if you don't have friends that have the same money value that you do, that you're going to want to be left alone. You shut down because you just get sick to death, sick to fucking death of everybody asking for money. It just sucks. So you end up really pulling back from everybody. You need to know that these feelings are possible to come to you. And you have to get it in your head right now that when you get to that level of wealth, that you have to push humanity forward with your projects, because governments do not have the expertise or the brain power or the passion that you do to make your project happen. You are my army of humanitarians. You will push humanity forward in ways that the government does not have the expertise in, nor do they have the brain power to do. Your brain has been telling you for years that you can't do shit. And God bless everyone who's listening to this, because your heart has overridden your brain, and you know you can do this. A lot of this information is what causes people to blow out their wealth or spend all their wealth and spend it foolishly. It's because they didn't have their feet underneath them. They had feelings that they didn't know were going to come. They're unexpected. And like I said, the other wealthy people, they'll fucking laugh at you. They think you need to go through the fire. Let's find out what they're made of. Okay, they made it through. Okay. So this is some kind of shitty stuff to tell you, I know. But if it doesn't happen, if you never feel any of those kind of feelings and some of the rough stuff I talked about, that's fabulous. But if you do start to feel like that, I hope you can remember these conversations, because I truly want you to be the best you can be and be the most successful humanitarian and wear that cape proud, because you are the people the rest of the world is waiting for. My name is Miss Parker, and this is RV Project Help. And that concludes that part of the program. If you have any kind of questions, anything you want to ask me, please do.
What are you most excited about or looking forward to in your personal life, not just our projects, at getting like a personal chef or personal assistant?
Wow. I'm looking forward to the day that my daughter takes a red pill. I think that will be the thing I'm looking forward to the most. That my daughter finally realizing that her mother is not crazy and Donald Trump still is her president. And yeah, that's what I'm waiting for. That's the thing that I'm most excited about. I know what they're doing to the kids. And I think I'm most excited about knowing it's all fucking gonna stop. So I have this terrible feeling that as long as this is still going on and we're waiting for all the shit to start with our RV, that they're still hurting kids. So I think that I'm just looking forward to it stopping. That's pretty much what I'm looking forward to. I think the RV is the signal to us that it stopped, because they couldn't put all these millions and billions of dollars into the hands of common men and women unless they had gotten rid of all the thieves, all the child killers. I don't think that they could have done this. So I think they have to clear the trees so that we can come in. And I think that's what's I think it took them a lot longer than they thought, up until I realized that Trump, when you see Trump's speech, you look at the podium he's on, and it says 88022. Looking at that podium and thinking when Mar-a-Lago was rated on 88, take away the 022, Trump's told us the entire time that this was going to happen. So I just, I'm just mostly excited for when it to stop. That's all. Anyway, is anybody else have a question? Well, folks, if there's nobody that has a question, I'm going to end this recording. I hope you got something out of it. I hope it helped you. Thank you to all the people that were able to hang out in this topic and conversation and listen to it. It's kind of rough in places, but appreciate you listening to it. Keep some of this information in the back of your mind. I hope that none of these things happen to you. I hope that none of these negative feelings happen to you. But if they do, you've got like something to stand on. May God keep all the humanitarians safe and in his heavenly hands. Amen.